Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free. And things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you very much for joining us here in the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me this evening, as always, my co-host and producer, Tim Dennis. Good evening, Tim.
Good evening.
Well, tonight we've got a unique and kind of interesting show that we're going to be bringing to you. Starting off the show, though, we'd like to introduce a magazine that's out there circulating right now. It's a paranormal magazine. It's called Haunted Times, and this evening with us, for the first few minutes of the show here, we have the president and senior editor, Mr. Christopher Moon. Good evening, Christopher.
Good evening. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. Thanks a lot for joining us here on the show this evening. Appreciate having you here.
Absolutely. Likewise.
Now, let's talk about Haunted Times magazine. When did this magazine begin?
Actually, the magazine started as an online in early 2005. And
okay.
Did a couple of issues online and then ended up going to a print magazine. And that's where we're at today.
Oh, very cool. And I know you've had quite a few great cover stories. I know you had my buddy John Zaffis on there not too long ago. I think that was on issue number 3, you said, right?
It sure was. He took our summer issue. Just a great interview with John. He really revealed some things I don't think he's really ever spoken about in the past.
Well, let's tell people, how can they find you and find Haunted Times magazine?
Well, the easiest way is to go to our website, which is hauntedtimes.com. We are internationally distributed by Ingram Periodicals, so we're in every major bookstore. If people want to go ahead and look for us there, but it's always easier to go to the website and just order there.
Sure. So you've got it there. And then what type of articles do you guys cover? Just strictly ghost-related?
No, actually, we cover every aspect of the paranormal. Actually, the next issue that we have coming up is focused on the scientific exploration of vampirism, and we're really excited about that one as well. So to this point, we've covered just about everything as far as features go. We've covered, obviously, ghosts and hauntings, demonology, and now moving into a different realm.
Great. What's the cost to buy the magazine off the shelves or picking up a subscription of it?
I know you can pick it up for, I believe, $6.50 for a single issue. If you send in the subscription card, it's $28. And if you order online for a full subscription, I believe it's only $32.50.
Wow, that's a heck of a deal.
Yeah, four issues were quarterly. So,
well, now the season paranormal is right now kind of at an apex, wouldn't you say? I mean, probably not since the turn of the century, with all spiritualism as high as it is. You know, the popularity of the paranormal seems to be really incredibly high again right now. What do you think has to do with that?
Well, it really is amazing. You know, there's been a lot of us who've been doing the work for a long time, and to see it peak like this is just an incredible thing. I usually go back to the fact, obviously 9/11, when that happened, I think a lot of people out there were really looking for answers at that point about, you know, where do we go from here? Not just our day-to-day lives, but what lies beyond the world that we're in right now. So I think that was the start of it, and then obviously the media outlets picked up on it, and it just really exploded.
Well, I want to make sure that we cover as well that for those, I mean, we know with the advent of TV shows like Ghost Hunters and Most Haunted and everything, there seems to be 1,000 new Ghost Hunter teams popping up everywhere. And Christopher actually, Chris, which way do you prefer it? Chris, Christopher?
Chris or Christopher is fine.
Okay. Christopher Moon actually hosts Ghost Hunter University. Is that correct?
Yeah, we've actually been doing those since 2004. When I was originally with Ghost Hunter Magazine, we started that.
And what exactly do you do with Ghost Hunter University?
Well, it's a lot of fun. What we do is we actually travel to purportedly haunted locations across the country, mainly hotels, museums, and different spots like that. And we go in and we bring in the public and teach classes to them, Ghost Hunting 101, and now we're actually doing a Ghost Hunting 102 class. But we take them in, we teach the class, we have a dinner, and then we actually take them out on an interactive investigation. So it's nice for them to be able to take the scientific tools that they just learned about in class, go out in the field and actually experience what we were talking about. And everybody seems to have a great time.
Great. And the reason I wanted to mention that, Chris, is you know we've got Darkness Radio events where we go out to haunted locations similar to you, but we go with most of the celebrities. We do it more for an entertainment value of getting to hang out and ghost hunt with your favorite celebrities that you've seen on TV, and it's not so much more of an educational class as it is just a chance to kind of rub elbows with the elite in the paranormal media out there.
Sure.
And get familiar with them, and then of course we do have the fun. We do have some of the talks are a little bit more on the educational side about the proper techniques and management, but you're really more for the ghost hunter and the beginning ghost hunter, how to perfect and understand what they're doing and using the tools that they have. Is that correct?
It really is. And it's, the classes are designed to get the people out there hopefully doing it the right way, at least the way that we do it, understanding scientific investigation and, really teaching them what they need to do when they go in on these investigations and how to perform a proper investigation as well as deal with clients.
All right. Well, let's, I want to have you back on the show here in the future so we can talk a little bit more. We can talk a little bit more steadily about the Ghost Hunter University, and we can discuss more about Haunted Times magazine. This evening, we've got, our show is based around one of the articles that's running in your newest issue.
Absolutely.
And wanted to talk to you a little bit about this. Now, the article that we're referring to is about the connection with Mark David Chapman and John Lennon. Of course, the murder took place on December 8th, 1980. And now there is a new speculation and theory that perhaps, well, I guess not new so much as the fact that Mark David Chapman claimed to have been possessed back then, but now there's a refound interest in this, and we're going to be bringing it out and making people a little bit more aware of it with this magazine article written by Chip Coffey. And when they approached you with this, Chris, I'm just curious, walk me through the process for you. Did you feel that there was still going to be a huge interest in the death of John Lennon this far out, and did you really think that there was any credence to the fact that Mark David Chapman claimed to be possessed when he did the heinous crime?
Well, to be honest with you, when I first heard about the story, Chip had contacted us and basically gave us just an overview of, I have this information, are you interested in it? And when it first came about, I, just like you said, it's so dated and it really didn't appeal to me right off the bat. But when I had a chance to sit down with Chip over the phone and he explained to me exactly how this all tied in together and the new revelations that came to it regarding exorcisms, possessions, things along those lines, of course, I jumped at it. I said, well, if you can put together this story and it's credible, we'd love to run the story and possibly give it a cover. And I have to say, after I saw the finished product, I was just blown away. Some of the facts that have been brought to light at this point are just amazing, and they're just undeniable how they all come together.
Yeah, it's been strange how they're actually, with all, sorry about that, we've got a little text message coming into us here at the station.
No problem.
Thanks to the Batman theme. We've got, right now, demonic possession and the popularity of exorcisms and things that are going on out there also seem to be rising just as high as the ghost hunting interests have become. And, do you have any fear doing magazines and articles like this that it's going to cause more people to be intrigued and interested in demonology and getting involved in something that maybe they're in way over their heads with?
Well, that is a danger that you definitely do run. Obviously going back to John Zaffis and what he teaches and his experience in demonology, I've learned a lot from him, and I feel confident in what I do with the demonic now. But, when it comes to the quote-unquote amateur who's out there and just taking an interest in it, there is always that risk. And what we do is we like to just present what we feel are the scientific facts, the possibilities that are out there, and really stress that if people are interested in exploring this further on their own, that they need to contact a professional.
All right. Well, that's definitely good advice. Well, Chris, we want to thank you very much for joining us here. And like I said, we'd like to have you back in the future to talk more about Haunted Times Magazine and also about, you know, the Ghost Hunter University that you run. And we want to thank you, too, for taking a chance. This is an amazing article. It's a fascinating topic, and I'm glad that you took a chance on letting it, you know, be spoken and shared with the rest of the populace out there.
Well, thanks for having me on tonight. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you being here with us, Chris. Thank you for tuning in to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. When we come back, we're going to be speaking with the author of that article, Mr. Chip Coffey, and his special guest, who was friends with Mark David Chapman, knew Mark David Chapman, and has had contact with him since his arrest. We'll be back with more right after this.
We thought El Chupacabra meant the cup of coffee in Spanish.
Mi amo Eduardo Especial. ¿Cómo está el yay?
What you talking about, Willis?
Shows you what we know. Stay tuned. There's more to come from the darkness on the edge of town.
For 58 years, Fate has consistently supplied its loyal readership with a broad array of true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate is a factual magazine containing articles by experts in all walks of life, and by others just like you who have something dynamic, significant, and truthful to say. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, archaeological hotspots, alternative science, and much, much more. To receive your free Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit our website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. Or www.fatemag.com. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Are you tired of reading about what couple in Hollywood is breaking up or divorcing? Have you ever wondered where you can find the news that covers the subjects that you are really interested in? I would like to invite you to visit supernaturalnews.com. Supernatural News uses the latest internet technology to search for the topics we know you will be interested in reading. News of the latest Bigfoot, UFO, or Loch Ness monster sightings. Read about the latest conspiracy theories and urban legends. Supernatural News, where belief and reality merge.
Try not to fall asleep. We'll only give you nightmares. Welcome back to the darkness on the edge of town.
I'd like to live to ripe old age with Yoko only. And I'm not afraid of dying. I don't know how I'd feel at the moment, but I'm prepared for death because I don't believe in it. I think it's just getting out of one car and getting into another.
This evening, our topic swings to an article that's a cover story of Haunted Times Magazine, as we alluded earlier. We've got with us the author of that article, Mr. Chip Coffey. Good evening, Chip.
Hi, Dave. How you doing?
Doing great. Thank you very much for joining us here this evening and talking to us about this. This is an amazing topic, and you know, I mean, I know people are buzzing talking about the idea of that there's more to the death of John Lennon than maybe just a nut that took his obsession a little too far.
Yeah, the article's created quite a stir.
What do you, you know, first of all, let's kind of prime the pump here a little bit. How did you even find a connection to this? How did the world open up to Chip Coffey about this this, you know, possible possession?
Several years ago, I had the distinct pleasure of meeting a lady here in the Atlanta area that, for privacy purposes, we are calling Maria. Not her real name, but she chooses to go by that name for purposes in dealing with the general public. So I met Maria, and in the course of conversations, I found out from her that she had been a friend of Mark David Chapman, the man who killed John Lennon. And she told me a fantastic story that it was really, really hard for me to believe at the time of all the connections that she had with him, but the more she told it to me, it sort of stretched my belief system to a degree, and the more I started to delve into it, and the fact that she lived in a house that was infested by something negative, and that he had been a friend of hers, and then the stories that she told me, that's kind of the backup story of what happened. And in the course of events, it took a lot of convincing to get Maria to allow me to actually write the article because she wanted no press or no publicity about the story, even 2.5, almost 3 decades later. But finally, she gave me permission to write it, and thus the story came about.
All right. So when you heard this, though, now, were you a fan of John Lennon yourself growing up, Chip?
I liked the Beatles in their earlier days. As the time progressed and they really started to move into some really different and obtuse sort of things, I sort of lost interest in the Beatles, to be honest with you.
Okay. So as they kind of progressed into more of the hippie movement, there just wasn't as much interest for you, huh?
Well, I was a poor little Southern boy, so.
I guess. Now, you had mentioned Maria's involvement with this. So you began. Now, what inspired you to bring this article out at this point?
I think that it was a curious thing to look at, that there could be some sort of paranormal connection to what happened with this case, with Mark Chapman, with John Lennon. And it was a very interesting story to me, and I felt that other people would find it equally as interesting to figure. Those who are interested in the possibility of paranormal events or demonic events would find this extremely compelling. And even the mainstream public might, you know, things that make us go, they may stop and take a look at this.
Right. Well, now, we have Maria on the line with us. Is that correct, Chip?
We do.
Maria, welcome to the show this evening.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
I appreciate you having me.
Well, I appreciate you spending the time with us this evening and sharing your story. Now, let's start back. This goes back before your connection or friendship with Mark David Chapman. You believe that you lived in a haunted house. Is that correct?
That's correct.
What led you to the belief that your house was haunted to begin with?
Our daughter, apparently something was trying to attach itself to her, and she was having extremely horrible nightmares and acting very suspiciously every single night at the same time. And we went through all the doctors and did everything you do for your child, but nothing helped. We went through the church, we asked for help, and she continued to be just hysterical pretty much all the time. The doctors put her on large doses of Dilantin and Phenobarb to try to calm her down, which actually just turned her into somewhat of a zombie.
Wow, I guess.
And so she was just not doing well in school, and we were all quite miserable. But I could tell you individual things that happened that made us realize what was going on, but I'd be on the phone all night.
Okay. Well, let's start off real quickly. Now, what year was this that you started realizing that your house was haunted?
Let me see. She was 6 years old in 1971.
Okay. So it was around 1971.
Mm-hmm, around that. I have to do math in my head, which isn't good.
Sure. Well, it's better than Tim and I. We have to kick off our shoes and socks just to be able to count all the way up to 20.
So, I understand.
All right. So it was around 1971 when this began. Now, was this house, did you purchase this house and move in, or was it just all of a sudden it started in 1971? Can you bring us up to date a little bit on that?
It started about 2 weeks after we moved into the house.
All right.
I had asked my daughter, Kathy, to I was going to lie down and take a nap. Had all these boxes all over the house, and asked her if she'd take care of her little brother.
Mm-hmm.
She said yes, and I lay down to go to sleep, and when I woke up, she was standing over me with the bathroom scales, and she dropped them on my face.
Wow.
That was the first thing that happened, and that was so out of character for her, and she didn't ever remember doing it.
Okay.
So we knew we had a problem right then. Of course, we thought it was more of a neurological...
like a sleepwalking type problem? Is that what you were considering? Okay.
Yes, that's what we were thinking, but it just got more intense and more intense. And
now, you said that it always continued or began around 11 p.m. every night, correct?
Every night, mm-hmm.
Was she asleep at that time? Would it wake her up? Would it be just that that's around the time that she'd go to bed? You know, help us understand that a little more.
Well, no, she went to bed earlier, and she appeared to be asleep, but she never remembered.
Was she ever a part of any sleep studies to
no,
test?
No, she wasn't.
Okay.
Perhaps they didn't do it so much at that time.
Right.
She did see two neurologists, and I would think that they would have been the one to conduct a sleep study.
Sure.
If they were doing them. But, yes, it was 11 o'clock every night, and she would just be babbling about this man standing behind me. and screaming and cursing. You'd swear she'd been around a sailor.
Hmm. That's strange. Well, yeah, so one of the medications they had her on was Dilantin, and isn't that a medication that they usually give for seizures?
That's right.
So did they think that maybe there was something like a seizure-like activity going on the brain that was causing this to happen?
That's what they thought.
Okay.
They thought she had psychomotor epilepsy.
Okay.
And which did they have the petit mal seizures. But she never, as far as I know, she never had a seizure.
All right.
And I had never heard of psychomotor epilepsy.
Now, it seems in medicine there's always some kind of crazy big name for something little going on, right?
Well, I wondered if they had just named the particular illness as we went.
That's right.
But anyway, they gave her Dilantin, and it just made her, almost catatonic.
Now, did you see that was actually helping, though? Was it taking away the night terrors or the problems that were occurring at 11 o'clock?
It would for a little while.
Okay.
And then it would start again. And we left that house to go to New York, and she was amazingly, she did beautifully in New York.
Oh, so the minute you took her out of that area and that house, the problems all seemed to fade away.
It did. And, you know, moving a child from the South to New York, you would think would be real catastrophic.
Right.
But she did beautifully, and she had none of these episodes, that's what we call them, because we didn't know what else to call them, while she was in New York.
Okay.
Not a one.
Now, when you were there, how long did you live in this home?
7 years.
Okay, so you were in this home for 7 years with this activity going on. Now, had it affected any of the rest of you? Were any of the rest of you sensing anything in this home malevolent or evil aside from the actions of your daughter?
Well, my son was also, he was 3 years younger than Kathy, and he was terrified. He would tell me that he'd wake up in the middle of the night and she'd be standing over him with this frightening little smile on her face.
Okay.
And one night, I didn't sleep well, and I heard her moving around, so I got up, and she had a pillow over his face.
Oh, my.
So we changed doctors once again, and more medication, and we never did seem to find that correct combination of drugs to keep her level.
Okay, but those were still surrounding her. I mean, did any of the rest of you ever feel a cold grasp or hear a voice or strange knockings in the wall, anything else to lead you to believe that there was anything else going on in the house aside from what was happening to your daughter?
Well, I smell cologne a lot, and I have seen objects move on my server. Move from one end to the other and then off onto the floor. Books came off bookshelves.
All right, so there was definitely some other haunting stuff going on.
Not just her. And there were so many people who came into the house one time and refused to ever come back in it again.
Hmm.
Well, although nothing happened to them, it was just that feeling.
Right. Chip, let me ask you real quickly. Now, being involved in the paranormal and a paranormal investigator, now, we come into this little girl's life at around the age of 7, and for 7 years, which seemed to be during the teen angst years and coming into puberty and hormones, isn't that what's usually equated with poltergeist activity that surround young girls like that?
Lots of times it is. You're absolutely correct. It's one of those things that seems to, a lot of that sort of activity seems to center around children.
And now at the age of 14, when they move out to New York, everything seems to subside. Do you get a feel, as a psychic and a medium yourself, do you get a feel that, you know, some of it may have been from her own angst, her own energies that were kind of throwing out there and causing all of this insanity to go on around them?
Well, first of all, let me back up for a second and tell you that the year, Maria, you moved into the house in 1971, correct?
That's right.
The family actually moved away from the house for a year and then returned to the house. So that's the way it happened. They moved away from the house to New York in 1976, so they were away during the time that Kathy was, if we do the math, she was about 8 or 9 years old at that time, and then came back within a year after they left to go to New York. And when they returned to the house, and we can talk about that later, when they came back to the house, all hell really broke loose when they came back from New York.
But for that 1 year window that you were away from the house, there was no problem with Kathy.
She was completely clear.
Okay. All right. That's interesting. All right.
Very interesting. But to answer your question that you ask about that, it is very common for those things to start to come into a child's life. Now, what's the cause and what's the effect is what I would look at. You know, is she a more vulnerable target at that point in time? Do the hormonal changes going on in children or whatever goes on inside their own bodies, their own angst, their own changes, does that ramp up the activity? Is one thing feeding off of another?
Right. Well, yeah, that would lead you to believe. I mean, that's just strange that was going on. But, you know, again, if we were able to move out of that house for a year. Now, Maria, was there ever any research done or did you ever speak to the people that owned the house prior to you to see if they ever had any kind of problems or challenges in the home?
No, we never did. They had moved away, and we were unable to find them.
Okay.
I have talked to the people who bought the house from us.
Right.
And the male owner said, no, nothing had happened, nothing at all. But his wife at the same time is saying, well, what about when? And he was just saying, no. Nothing's happened here.
Okay. But nothing to the levels, at least, that you guys were going through. None of the terror or the insanity that was kind of going on for you guys at all.
Well, I don't know.
Okay. Well, I'm sure they wouldn't be hiding it if that was the case. But again, yeah, I guess it could be wrong. Some men are too proud to admit that there's anything freaky going on and they want to keep control of their house, I guess. So.
But one of the children, there's an interesting story about what one of the children actually told Maria.
And what was that?
That moved into the house after she lived there.
Okay. And Maria, what was that story?
Well, this child was the same age as my daughter.
Okay.
And they went to work with me one Saturday. And I asked her, I said, how do you like our house? And she said, well, I like it okay, but I went around the corner of the stairs, and there was an old man standing there.
Hmm.
And I said, well, what did you do? And she said, well, I just kind of stood there frozen, and then I ran. And she went to her teacher that day at school and told the teacher what had happened, and the teacher told her if it happened again just to tell him to go away.
Right.
And that's, Cindy saw this old man. Often she would see him looking through her window, and she was on the second floor.
Oh, geez. Now, your daughter saw this as well? Saw this old man?
Yes, she did.
Okay. And did she feel he was the man that was frightening her all the time at 11 o'clock? Was he? And if so, what was she saying he was doing?
Well, she didn't remember the 11 o'clock terrors.
Okay.
After we left the house completely, it started coming back to her. But while we lived in the house, she didn't know. She'd wake up in the morning and be exhausted, but she would have no idea what had gone on during the night.
But she did have memories of this man at other times?
Uh-huh. She would remember that there was an old man, but not until we moved.
Okay.
Except when it was happening. And then she would be screaming and crying and cursing, and she'd say, Mom, there's an old man standing right behind you.
How did that make you feel? Did you think your daughter was just overly imaginative or nuts, or how did that strike you at first?
Well, at first I just thought she was having the night terrors.
Okay.
Just like you say, maybe poltergeist activities, and I began corresponding with a doctor, Dr. Roll at Duke University, and he helped me a lot understand what was going on from a psychical point of view. After so many doctors, I finally decided that it really was not something physical.
Right. Okay. Well, were you fearful for your own safety when you started seeing things move around the house yourself?
Not really. I was so worried about the children. I never was.
Okay.
I didn't think about myself too much.
All right. Well, that's good. I guess, I mean, as long as you were that much in control. Now, you said that you went to the clergy and you went for help. Did you have blessings done on the house? Did you have exorcisms done on the house at all? What all did it entail of what you reached out for help?
We had a Catholic priest come to the house and bless it one day when she was at school.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to put her through anything as traumatic as an exorcism. Well, my husband would never have agreed to it anyway.
Okay.
But he blessed the house, and he left her a cross. And she came in from school, and she said, "Oh, what is this?" And I said, "A very special friend brought it to you." And she immediately got a hammer and a nail, and she nailed it over the door to her bedroom.
Okay.
And that was unusual because we're not particularly religious people.
Mm-hmm.
So for her to take that and then, that very minute, and hang it up was quite interesting. She felt very safe with it.
And did that help stave things off for a while as well?
No, that really didn't.
Did it seem to inspire the evil spirits or the dark spirits or malevolent spirits, whatever you want to call them? Did it incite them or get them a little bit more riled up after this blessing happened?
I honestly don't remember. I don't think so.
All right. Well, now, probably a lot of people are wondering at this point, well, what does your haunted house have to do with the death of John Lennon? So let's start off now bringing us into this a little bit, Maria. You you came into knowing Mark David Chapman in what year?
72.
Okay.
1972. He was the youth counselor at the YMCA camp during the summer, and both of my children went there. And he took a particular liking to Kathy and taught her to swim and did archery and all the type of things that she had an eye-hand coordination problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't think, well, we were told by the doctor that she would never be able to catch a ball, ride a bike, but Mark taught her to do all those things. So, of course, we were very fond of him.
Right.
And he began spending a lot of time with the family. Almost becoming part of the family. And that's how we met him and how he came to be at the house quite a bit.
So he started with your family in 72, getting to know them. At what point did he become integrated into your family as such a close friend?
Almost immediately.
Okay. Well, sure, I would say as a parent, as soon as you start seeing results. Now, I just have to ask this as a parent myself. And in this day and age, were there any concerns about the relationship between your daughter and this older boy?
No, there were not.
Okay.
For the most part, they were only together when I was there. There were a few times that he was with her alone, but I never had any problem. Never even occurred to me that he would do anything.
Okay. All right. So there was no fear of
Molestation
or any problems. Okay. And again, I apologize. I don't mean to be crude with it. I just am curious because I know a lot of people that are listening are probably feeling and wondering the same questions that we're dealing with as well. So,
I think if it were now, I would be much more concerned. But at that time, it didn't seem to be so prevalent. And we thought so much of him. It never occurred to me that he might do something like that.
Now, do you notice at this point, any correlation with things starting to progress at your home, getting more problematic as Mark David Chapman becomes a friend of the family, or was it pretty much just the same attacks at all times?
It was pretty much the same, and I never talked to him about it. That was mainly because my husband kept telling me, there is a reason for this. There is a logical reason if we just find it. And I never brought it up. I never brought it up to anyone. So, no, it didn't increase until after we came back from New York.
Okay.
And then it was much worse.
For those of you that are just tuning into The Darkness on the Edge of Town, our guest this evening is Chip Coffey. He's a psychic. He's a medium. He's also the author of an article in Haunted Times magazine about the death of John Lennon and the tie-in that perhaps John Lennon's murderer, Mark David Chapman, was possessed by a demon. And Maria Simpson is a friend of Chip's here, and she's on with us. And she actually has, as we've just mentioned, a tie with Mark David Chapman. She her daughter, who was a special needs child at the time, for coordination, was going to the Y, and Mark David Chapman was one of the youth counselors who took time with her, taught her how to throw, how to do a lot of things that doctors said she would not be able to do. So he integrated himself into your life and into your family and into your friendship. And at no time you ever, you know, there's just some people you get a feeling that are just off, Maria. Did you ever get a feeling around Mark that he was not all there?
Not until he moved to Hawaii and then came back for a visit. Then we saw a radical change in him. But prior to that, when he was having dinner with us and we were canning beans together and that sort of thing, the only thing I knew was that he was basically a sad person. He was depressed and didn't quite know what to do with his life. But that's not unusual for a young man.
Well, now, in 1972, how interested in the Beatles and John Lennon was Mark David Chapman at that point?
Oh, he was just all... He was obsessed with them. He absolutely loved them. And he had their tapes in the car. And if we rode anywhere with him, we listened to the Beatles.
Okay. But did you feel that there was any more insanity in that as any other teenager of the time over rock and roll music?
I don't think so. I remember the same hysteria with Elvis.
Right. All right, so now... He's into your life for a couple of years, and then you said you lived in that house for about 4 years, then moved out for 1 year?
Yes, that's right.
Now, when you moved out of the house, were you still in contact with Mark Chapman, or had it already started to fall apart, or not fall apart, but had the separation begun already?
No, we talked on the phone during that time, and he was doing some volunteer help with Vietnamese children and finding them homes.
And where was he located at this point?
He was up in the north somewhere. I really have forgotten.
Okay, so at what point did he move away? Did he move before you moved to New York?
He moved while we were in New York.
Okay, and then you're gone for a year. Mm-hmm. You come back to this haunted home. Mm-hmm. What would possess you to come back and bring your family back into a home when you've taken them out for a year and it's been a successful year without the attacks on your daughter and the craziness of the home that you were in? Why would you bring them back?
There again, my husband just said, "Oh, it's nothing."
Okay.
I couldn't convince him there was something going on.
Well, Maria, you know well enough that men never listen.
I'm sorry?
I said you know well enough that men never listen, right?
Isn't that the way that it usually goes with these cases, that the women and the kids are the ones that typically in cases that have this sort of activity, the women and the children are going, yeah, there's something going on, and the men are going, nah, there's nothing going on.
Yeah.
That's right. You know, it's just something we haven't found the answer to yet.
No. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I wanted to move when we came back. But he was not ready. So when we did finally leave, then everything's been fine since.
Great.
And he has to question it now.
Sure. Well, now you moved out for the year. You came back to the home. Now, did Mark Chapman come back into your life? I mean, did he move back down? Because you were in Georgia at the time, correct?
Right, yes.
Did he move back to Georgia again?
Yes, he came back home. I don't think he was able to handle the emotional upheaval that these children were going through. And he was just he was so gentle and so sympathetic with everybody and everything that he just couldn't handle the emotional impact.
Okay. So now let's start to escalate the story a little bit. Now, was he spending nights at all at your home?
He has spent nights with us.
Was he there to witness the attacks or Chip, do we call them attacks that were going on to her daughter, or was it just the activity around her daughter?
I think Maria uses a great word, and that's episodes.
Okay.
Nothing happened when he was there.
Really?
Yeah, nothing happened. And I never told him that things were different when he wasn't there.
Was he aware of the idea that you thought the house was haunted?
No, he was not.
Okay. So, Chip, I'm curious at this point. Now, this girl feels some kind of kinship and security with this man, Mark Chapman.
Right.
And he has gone out of his way to help her. He's definitely getting through. He's helping her do things that doctors say she would not be able to do. And when he stays there for the night, there are no episodes.
Very curious.
Does this, in your professional opinion as a paranormal investigator and as a medium and psychic, what type of correlation do you see with this?
I don't know that I really, this is the first time that question's ever been asked, so bravo to you for asking that question, because it never even occurred to me to explore it to that level, to ask if Mark had stayed overnight in the house. It never occurred to me to ask that question, and hearing that information certainly makes me have one of those moments to find that information possibly relevant, possibly, and at best, very curious for the fact that while he was in the house, nothing occurred.
Now, did he have a strong religious background? Do you know, Maria?
He became very religious when he was in his teens.
So while you knew him, he was in his religious state?
Yes, he was.
So I wonder if maybe you said that your family wasn't necessarily religious, correct?
Right.
So what... Maybe he was bringing in some form of protection in his own enlightenment or connection with whatever God he believed in, Chip. I mean, what's your thought on that?
Actually, from what I understand, he attended at sort of an evangelical, almost a tent meeting style revival, and that while he was there, the minister was doing, you know, baptisms or savings or something, and Mark became very, very active with the church and his belief in Jesus. He became what at that time was called a Jesus freak.
Okay. All right. So, well, then, yeah, I mean, that begs the thought that then if maybe something was that evil and this man was so compassionate at the time that there was he brought in some form of protection, maybe not just for himself but for the entire home. Now, isn't that kind of a strange dichotomy too? You know, all we've known of this man is that he was a cold-hearted killer who, you know, gunned down one of our rock music icons and legends, and, you know, was caught just standing there with a copy of Catcher in the Rye in his hand and an autographed copy of the Double Fantasy album, wasn't it? It's so strange to think that this guy came from maybe a more enlightened stage at some point.
He really, from that perspective, I see where you're going with that, but one of the things that you have to understand is that throughout all this, Mark continued to be very, very troubled and was searching for answers. And even during this time period, Mark suffered from psychological, psychiatric problems from the standpoint that he always had this group of what he calls his little people around him. He was very obsessive compulsive with that whole thing. He was like the Lord God and master of this group of little people that supposedly resided in the walls of his home his family's home. He had a troubled childhood, with troubles with his father and a father who was abusive to him and his mother. His obsession went to the Beatles. His obsession went to the whole idea of the book The Catcher in the Rye. So Mark had a lot of deep-seated psychological problems at the same time, and in his search for answers, I guess that begs the question, was that enough to really protect him or save him? Because in the long run, his belief system wasn't evidently strong enough to do that.
So, but at some point, how old was he when he believed that he was the Lord and Master of the little people in his walls?
Perhaps Maria can answer that better than I can, but I'm thinking from early teens on through the time, practically to the time that he killed Lennon.
Oh, really?
He did. He, when he was quite young in his teens, he had these imaginary friends, these little people that he talked to. And I felt like he was talking to himself, an alter ego type situation.
All right.
Because it was always very positive, you know, what he would say to them and the replies that he got. And it wasn't all the time. He would mention it occasionally. But for the most part, he was very kind, very gentle, always for the underdog.
Very interesting. Well, you know what? We're going to take a quick break here, Maria Chip. Thank you very much for joining us. And thank you all for tuning into The Darkness on the Edge of Town, our show this evening, as we're exploring the possible connection with a possession of the murder of John Lennon, Mark David Chapman. We'll be back with more with Chip and Maria right after this.
Once you have seen Dave and Tim in the light, you'll understand why we must return to The Darkness on the Edge of Town. Stay tuned. There is more to come.
For 58 years, Fate has consistently supplied its loyal readership with a broad array of true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate is a factual magazine containing articles by experts in all walks of life, and by others just like you who have something dynamic, significant, and truthful to say. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, archaeological hotspots, alternative science, and much, much more. To receive your free Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit our website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730 or www.fatemag.com. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Hi, this is Russ Clark. If you're a regular listener of Darkness Radio, by now you have certainly heard my radio commercial regarding my hypnosis products. Well, I'm here today to tell you that these products work. These products have worked for many, many people, including some listeners of Darkness Radio. I stand behind my product 100%. If you give it a try and you find it doesn't work for you, you can always return it to me for 100% of your money back. Plus, I'll pay to ship it back to me. That's how convinced I am this will work for you. In addition to that, you can contact me via email anytime with any questions that you may have. I promise this will work for you. So if you want to quit smoking, lose weight, become less stressed, manage some pain, or beat some insomnia, definitely check out my website at www.powerhypnosis.net or call 866-570-3544 and ask for me personally.
George Clooney, Carmen Diaz, Oprah, Ellen, George Bush, Diane Pelosi.
What are you doing?
I'm making a list of people I want to tell about charity checks.
Do you know any of those people?
No, but if I can get to them, they might want to tell the public how cool it is to use giving certificates as presents instead of gift certificates.
Giving certificates?
Yeah, you know, they can be used as a donation to any legitimate charity. So the person who gives a charity check gets the tax deduction, and the person who gets one decides where the money goes.
Why don't you just tell people directly about charity checks yourself?
Like anyone would listen to me.
www.charitychecks.us for information about the perfect present.
Well, no, they're not going to listen to you like that. But if you just said that Charity Checks provides a unique way to turn your gift money into giving money, they might pay attention.
Catchy.
Then you just casually say the web address, charitychecks.us, America's Giving Certificate.
I still think a celebrity endorsement would be more effective.
Are you tired of reading about what couple in Hollywood is breaking up or divorcing? Have you ever wondered where you can find the news that covers the subjects that you are really interested in? I would like to invite you to visit SupernaturalNews.com. Supernatural News uses the latest internet technology to search for the topics we know you will be interested in reading. News of the latest Bigfoot, UFO, or Loch Ness Monster sightings. Read about the latest conspiracy theories and urban legends. Supernatural News, where belief and reality merge.
You hear footsteps and things bumping and banging in the middle of the night. Could it be paranormal activity? Or is it just Dave and Tim raiding your fridge?
Beer.
Strange things happen in the darkness on the edge of town.
John Lennon was brought to the emergency room, the Roosevelt site, St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital, this evening, shortly before 11 p.m. He was dead on arrival.
And as soon as the word of the shooting was out, carried by radio stations across the city, his admirers started to gather. Their reaction was one of disbelief.
He's not dead. They're just saying that.
You know, the doctor just announced it.
Yes, but I don't care. They're just saying that to get people to leave. He's not dead. John Lennon can't be dead.
John Lennon's friends included a Paul McCartney lookalike.
It froze me. I came last night for
basically my own reasons to show support for whatever. It wasn't really morbid curiosity. This morning, I think I was here curious to see how everyone else reacted.
Symbolized hope. A new life, a new beginning. He was a great, great, great man.
The vigil has gone on all day, quietly for the most part, for many of the mourners are literally speechless with grief. But the crowds just won't go away. This is Martin Bell in New York.
Well, that, as we heard, was a recount from the original night on December 8th, 1980, when John Lennon was assassinated by Mark David Chapman. Our guests this evening are Chip Coffee, who has written an article for Haunted Times magazine. It's a current issue out, and it should be on newsstands. You can go out and find it. It's a quarterly magazine that comes out. And the article is about the death of John Lennon and the fact that, or belief that Mark David Chapman may have been possessed at the time of his murder of John Lennon. And on the phone with us, we have Maria Simpson, who is a, we're covering her name just to protect it, because unfortunately there are still so many fervent fans out there looking to point the blame at somebody, and since they can't get to Mark David Chapman, we certainly don't want any ill things to fall on Maria. So we're talking with Maria, which is not her real name, but Maria is with us this evening talking to us about her friendship and understanding of Mark David Chapman. Now, before we went to the break, Maria, you were talking about his delusions of talking to the little people in the wall. Now, at this point, when he starts talking to you about these things, are you concerned with him being around your family or your kids?
No, surprisingly, I wasn't, because I know that my brother had imaginary playmates when he was a child. And
right, but at this point, Mark David Chapman is a teenager.
That's true. He is. He's older. And I just thought it was his way of talking out his problems with me and with them, to himself, actually.
Now, were these people in the walls at your house, too, for him, or no?
No. He would just tell me about them, and funny. He would make them funny little stories.
Okay.
Make it very humorous, and he would say, oh, well, I talked to them today about such and such. But it was not a big deal. He didn't say much about it, and it didn't seem to have affected him in any way as far as normalcy is concerned. Now, if I look back on it now and am not involved with him as I was then, I might have thought it through a little more.
Oh, it was the 70s and we were all a little bit more laid back then, Maria. We'll give you some understanding for that.
No.
Now, let me ask you, Maria, so how long were you close with Mark David Chapman?
We moved in about 7 years, we left the house, and he had moved to Hawaii.
Okay.
And he gave me an address and told me he was going to live with a Reverend Anderson. And I wrote to him every week at this address, and I never received a reply from him. And so then, that was actually before we moved. I came home one night to this house, one we're discussing, and he was sitting on the stoop in the back of the house. And at that time, he had changed drastically.
Now, how long had he been gone for?
Well, golly, let me think here. Maybe a year.
Okay. Now, you're saying he changed drastically. Did he change in appearance, demeanor,
almost.
Both? Okay.
The expression on his face, and just the demeanor, the way he carried himself and the way he spoke was real frightening. And my daughter hid behind me, and my son too. He was crazy about him also, and they didn't want anything to do with him that night.
One of the things that was mentioned in the article, if I can interject for a second, Dave, is the fact that at this point in time, Mark had tried suicide. He had gone to Hawaii. He had tried suicide. He had become involved with a young woman in Hawaii whose name was Gloria. And interestingly enough, in a twisted sense of homage to Lennon, perhaps Gloria was also of Asian or Japanese. I think she was Japanese as well, ethnicity. He became involved with her. She eventually ended up being his wife. And on this visit that Mark made to the Simpson home, it was very curious that his nickname during the time that the kids worked with him was Nemo, N-E-M-O. And they called him that out of a reference to the Jules Verne novel, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, Captain Nemo. Mm-hmm. And Maria called him, "Oh, Nemo, it's so good to see you." And his reply was, "Don't call me that. Don't ever call me Nemo again." To which Maria said, "Why don't you want to be called Nemo anymore?" And he replied, I'm going to let Maria tell you what he replied.
He says, "Because Nemo means nothing. It means zero." Hmm. So, okay, well, okay, we won't call you Nemo anymore. But that was just one example of the way he had changed. He was very angry about it.
Now, as I'd heard in previous interviews, now, was this at the time you had somebody with you as well?
I did. I had three small boys who belonged to a celebrity here in Atlanta, and one of them was a junior. And when I introduced the boys to Mark, and he went crazy. He said, "Who would ever name their child this?" And I said, "Because this is his child. He's named after his father."
Right.
But he was hysterical. Why in the world would?
And he was bothered that these children were there, correct?
That's right. He didn't know them, and all of a sudden there were three extra children, and he was just completely unbalanced that evening.
Well, let me ask you this. Before we go to the top of the hour break here, Marie, and I'd like you to think about this, and we'll talk about it when we come back.
Okay.
As I heard you mention that on other interviews, and I hear you mention it tonight, I'm just curious. Do you think that maybe Mr. Chapman had something a little more sinister in mind for you and your family when he came there, and when there were more people than he expected, it kind of threw him? Now, I don't want you to answer that now. We'll talk about that when we come back after the top of the hour.
All right.
You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Our guests are Chip Coffey and Maria Simpson, talking about the death of John Lennon and the attachment that Maria had with Mark David Chapman in his younger years. We'll be back with more of this amazing interview right after this.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.